All right, the productivity SA may start. I don't know whether the chairperson of the board would like to make some introductory remarks.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. My team is going to put up the slides of the presentation and share them with you. These are slides you've seen before. Advised that they were sent through to the committee, to the portfolio committee, to the honourable members. Chair, I want to start by thanking you as the chair, the leadership of the Department of Employment and Labour, led by the Honourable Minister Ngesi, the Honourable Deputy Minister Ms. Moloi, and the Director General Mr. Lamati, and we thank you for the opportunity to
recording table, in progress
to table the Productivity SA annual report for the 2021 financial year. Chair, I am leading a delegation comprising of my fellow board members, although I noticed that some of them have not connected yet. And of course, some of them, Chair, have had big challenges because of the sudden changes we've had in the last week to dates and times. And it's been quite daunting. In fact, for me, I have to change my flight today because I was to present at 7, then I was told I'm presenting at 6. And I was landing only in Joburg just before 7, so I had to change my flight. So should colleagues not make it, I'm mentioning them, but it must just be understood that it's not out of lack of enthusiasm and passion to be here. It's just because of the sudden changes we've had to the times at the very last minute. But I was expecting Masha Bronkhorst, Farida Khan, Shivani Singh, and Chair, we also take the opportunity to introduce the chairperson. We've got a new chairperson of the Audit and Risk Committee, Mr. Paul Slack, as well as the CEO and CFO. In this order, Chair, we also have, as I've mentioned, our colleagues as well from the board. So the greatest challenge during the 2021, Chair, and the slides will be changed for me as we go along. I've also done it on the basis that the slides have been seen. So the idea is not to bore you with repeating what you've seen, but simply to pick up some highlights from it. And I will cover slides up to 21, from the beginning to 21. Then the CEO will take over and the CFO will come in thereafter. You'll see, Chair, that we always like to remind everybody of our mandate, so the Productivity South Africa mandate, and it's clearly stated that our mandate is to promote employment growth and productivity, thereby contributing to South Africa's socioeconomic development and competitiveness. The greatest challenge, Chair, during the 2020-21 financial year has been the adverse effect the global pandemic has had on businesses and the various limitations the lockdown brought about to our enterprise development and support programs and interventions, which came at a very great expense to the struggling beneficiaries. Several companies were in distress, and some, particularly SMMEs, shutting down and others scaling down operations to stay afloat and could not be assisted to potentially save those jobs. Despite these challenges, we made tremendous strides in consolidating our efforts to create an enabling environment conducive for entrepreneurship and sustainable enterprises, targeting SMMEs to preserve jobs and create productive employment and decent work. The impact of the COVID-19 pandemic has affected our operations at various levels, including limited access to clients. It was a very big problem to get to clients for our productivity practitioners and employees, unable to access the premises, resulting in remote work, therefore poor performance at 67% from 100% in the preceding year. You know, in 2019, 2020, we scored 100% for this. And this time 67%, because we just couldn't get to the clients and we couldn't force ourselves into their lives because it was understandable that the country was under lockdown. So in terms of our targets, we've come a little bit below there. And during the course of the financial year, you know, we've done a lot of things to try and take ourselves and be innovative to get to a different level. However, with the spirit of not letting a good crisis go to waste, we took the time to develop a paper entitled Open Inverted Commas, South Africa's Economic Recovery Plan Beyond the COVID-19 Pandemic, a strategy chair to unlock productivity and potential for improved competitiveness and sustainable economic growth. In the paper, we made a clarion call for government to support the role of the private sector as a principal source of economic growth and job creation, which position is also articulated in the ILO Centenary Declaration for the Future of Work 2019 by promoting an enabling environment for entrepreneurship and sustainable enterprises. We further advocated for addressing productivity holistically at all levels, national, sector, and enterprise. And I think, refreshing to hear the Minister of Finance, Minister Godongwane, also calling for this a few days ago, Chair, that productivity has to be the thing that we all focus on now. And so we think, as Productivity SA, we're starting to get to a point where people are starting to hear us. You know, sometimes better late than never. The frustration has been huge for us, for people to listen and to work with us. But we think a little bit every day, brick by brick, we're starting to get people listening, because this is important if we are to unlock South Africa's productivity and potential for sustained competitiveness and economic growth, targeting SMMEs as a catalyst for full and productivity employment and of course, consequent decent work for all, Chair, in line with SDG 8. You know, on decent work and economic activity. The paper was very well received by policymakers, both locally. Some inputs reflected in the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan, and the DTIC soliciting our inputs as they were developing the reimagined industrial policy. And also, Chair, we are happy to report at an international level, including the ILO, the International Labour Organization, which is considering collaborating with us, Chair, to pilot an integrated productivity ecosystem program in South Africa. JICA as well, our Japanese partners, which is utilizing our productivity experts to develop and implement the Africa Kaizen initiative in the continent. This is very clearly demonstrated, Chair, in slides 3 to 5. With an emphasis on slide 5, which is what we are looking at right now. You'll see that slide 5 covers all the issues that I'm referring to. You will see the reimagining the industrial strategy and district development model that I've just mentioned. You'll see the contribution to the NDP, chapter 3, which is to target programs that contribute to sustainable and inclusive growth and development. Chapter 9, improving productivity and developing world-class systems of innovation. Chapter 13, which is to implement programs that improve efficiency and effectiveness of government. And I think I have no intention, of course, of going through the entire slide, as I've mentioned, Chair, because I've already, for example, mentioned SDG 8, which appears on the same slide. The Centenary Declaration appears on the same slide. But I think it's important to highlight that as a contribution to the MTSF 2019 to 2024, Government priority 1 is a capable, ethical, and developmental state. This is key. Government priority 2 is economic transformation and job creation. Absolutely, absolutely key. It is through these thought leadership interventions that we've seen a positive response by strategic partners in the private sector, which is confirmed by the memorandum of agreement and understanding signed with Organized Business, with BUSA, with BBC, with SACI, and SBI. Government departments and entities in the economic cluster the AIDC, the CCMA, the ELSEZ, the LEDET, the LEDER, and the TIKZN, Chair, organized labor, SACTU, academia, at TUT, Enterprise, UP, UWC, and UJ, and international partners, Chair, which we've already mentioned, including the ILO. And for this, this is a huge milestone, Chair. This is, I think, the kind of thing that we have always been stressing, that we need to make sure that we galvanize everybody to work with us on making sure that we change the way things happen with very, very, very limited resources, because you know our situation of wanting more resources and we need more resources, but we've done the best we can with what we've got. It's been a long and slow process of placing Proactivity SA at the center of our partners' activities and realizing their strength and power and strategic importance of productivity and competitiveness engagement. It is very important, Chair, and we want to stress to the rebuilding, the restructuring, the re-engineering and recalibration of the economy we've been trying to enjoin everyone in for a sustainable and resilient economy. We have also seen a greater collaboration with the department through its visibility at the highest level, represented in many cases by the minister and the deputy minister, Ms. Boitumelo Moloi, at numerous webinars and engagements we have had during the current year under review. It is also very significant, Chair, that the board appreciate and of course thank the portfolio committee that we are talking to now on employment and labor under the capable leadership of yourself as Honorable Chair, for the most fruitful engagement we had on the 2nd of February 2021. I think to date, that's still the best engagement we've ever had with the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee in all the years that I've been involved. We, through your committee's request for us to present to you, we were challenged to demystify and simplify our productivity messaging and take you with us in ensuring that Productivity South Africa becomes the axis for the creation of employment and stemming the tide on the retrenchments that are causing a depressive state in our country. We remain very hopeful that we are going to get from strength to strength and that we're going to go beyond talking about these things and make sure that we have lots of action happening so that we can impact our people. Through the dedicated effort by the board chair, I have a very, very dedicated board. We've had many emergency meetings that have required all hands on deck. And my board members, my colleagues have not been found wanting in very trying circumstances, Chair. And in terms of the team at Productivity SA, under the leadership of the CFO, Dr. Sibusiso Sabela, at Productivity SA, Productivity SA has achieved an unqualified audit opinion during the year under review. Despite these achievements, South Africa's productivity and competitiveness, as well as the informality challenges, persist, Chair. These call for collaboration, and these are specifically the slides from 15 to 21, Chair, with emphasis on 15, 19, and 21. If you look at slide 15, Chair, it's a slide that we cannot be proud of. Whilst I always believe in creating an optimistic environment where we talk about a glass half full, we talk about all things positive, I think we would be missing an opportunity if we were not to tell you that that slide demonstrates a hugely abysmal performance by our country. You will see, we told you the last time in February when we spoke to you that South Africa, about just over 10 years ago, we were number 44 on the competitiveness index. We had slid to 61 when we spoke to you. As of the latest competitiveness index stats, you'll see that South Africa is now 61 out of 64 countries. We're going to be holding the bottom soon. At the rate we're going, we dropped from 59 in position in 2020. And the graph share is very self-explanatory. You will see it has numbers that are not flattering at all. On employment under economic performance, you'll see that we hold a 64. So with 64 out of 64 countries measured, we are the last. On domestic economy, we are 60 out of 64, Chair. And if you go further down under government efficiency, you'll see that under public finance, we are 60 out of 64. Under institutional framework, we are 58 out of 64. Under business legislation, we are 60 out of 64. Under social framework, we are 59. And under product and efficiency, we are 56. And the labor market, under business efficiency, we are 59. And as we go further down on business efficiency, you'll see in terms of attitudes and values, we are 61 out of 64. And then under basic infrastructure, we hit a 62 out of 64. Technology infrastructure, we are 61 out of 64. And on health and environment, we are 62. And in education, we are 63. So in the majority of those areas, we are almost holding the bottom, Chair, which I think at some stage we hope we shall all get hands on deck, get the shoulder to the wheel, so that we can be able to do the things that we need to do, because we are told by this IMD index tells you what it is you must fix. It tells you what it is you must attend to. I went as far as sending a copy of this document as a birthday gift to the president last year. I haven't heard from his office, but this was last year for his birthday. I thought this is one of those gifts that we'll keep giving, so that he can see that these are the areas that if we were to attend to them and focus on them as an entire country, we would be able to get our people to the promised land. At this time, Chair, I hand over to the CEO to table the organizational performance on slides 23 to 36, and then the CFO will present on slides 41. I take this opportunity on behalf of the board and the team to thank you for this opportunity. Over to you, CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon to the committee members, as well as the leadership of the department. Chair, as we present the performance over the medium term, you can see that, as the Chairperson said, in 2019-20, we were at 100%, and we dropped to 67% in 2020-21. And if you look at the areas where we had challenges in terms of slide number 24, if you look at the strategic objective 2, which is about supporting government programs aimed at sustainable employment and income growth, we had 2 performance indicators. We achieved 1, resulting in a 50% performance rate. In terms of strategic objective 3, which is to support enterprises facing economic distress and initiatives aimed at preventing job losses, we had 3 planned indicators and achieved 9, which puts us at 0% and hence the 67% that we're talking about. And I think it's important to highlight that we are more worried about strategic objective 3, particularly the fact, as the Chairperson mentioned, that a number of enterprises, when we did the last count, looking at the CEDA quarterly SMME report, between quarter 3 of 2019 and quarter 3 of 2020, over 200,000 small enterprises closed down, with over 1,500,000 jobs lost. So we thought that companies would actually come in large numbers to participate in the business turnaround and recovery program. Unfortunately, it was not the case. You'd recall that the program was suspension was lifted in July. So between July 2020 and March 2021, we had a poor turnout of companies. And when we inquired as to what are the reasons, we found that most were more concerned about getting the temporary employee relief scheme, as well as other government support programs, just that they can have finances to keep operating. So they then indicated to us that wait a bit, we want to sort out these issues, which is unfortunate because it is through this type of program that we're able to take those companies out of distress with the objective of saving jobs. In this slide, we're just giving you an indication of the two programs that performed poorly. That program, that is program two, competitiveness improvement services, as well as program three, as I indicated, business turnaround and recovery program. The next slides are just giving us an indication of the areas where we achieved. And on slide 30, we actually indicate that poor performance in terms of the competitiveness improvement and services, whereby we're looking at the number of entrepreneurs capacitated to promote the culture of productivity and entrepreneurship. We set ourselves a target of 1,878, and we could only achieve 927. And the reason really was that during this period, it was very difficult to access the companies. And we tried online platforms. Again, it was still difficult, and we began to pick up just towards the end of the financial year. The other area that, as I indicated, we performed poorly, it's in terms of the areas of business turnaround and recovery program, where we're looking at the number of jobs saved. We could only save over 3,000 out of over 8,700 that we targeted. And then in terms of companies facing economic distress supported, we could only support 25 and against the target of 174. And then workplace future forum members trained and capacitated, we could only achieve 96 against a target of 522. And as I said, this is what led us to achieving only 67% out of the work that we plan to do. Chair, the other slides are just an indication of where we were showing the key achievements. And at this time, I would then hand over to the CFO just to take us through the financial information as part of the reporting to the committee. Over to you, Esbu, with your permission, Chair.
CFO.
Chair, I'm still on.
No, thank you. We are waiting for the CFO to take us through.
Thank you.
The board and the board members, good evening.
Good evening, CFO. What has happened, Mr. Sakaza?
Maybe he had load shedding, Chair. Where's the CFO CEO? He's still connected according to this list though. No, he's gone. CEO, you might have to.
Back online.
You're back. Okay.
Hello?
I would advise, we have seen your face, I would advise that you switch off your video in case you have connectivity problems. I think we have seen your face. It's fine, Mr. Sabela.
I think CEO, you should do it because he's struggling.
Yes, just to take over, I would like to highlight that if you go into the annual report of Productivity SA, you will find on pages 56 to 84, the report of the independent auditors, whereby they are giving a reflection of the key issues that they looked at as they were looking at our financial statements, and also a reflection on their opinion. Chair, in terms of the highlights as per governance and regulatory compliance, I am happy to announce that the entity obtained an unqualified audit opinion for the financial year 2020-21. What is important within that is that the total revenue reflect a 24% increase year on year. And this is important to report on because over a period of time, we had financial challenges and we're beginning to turn the corner, Chairperson, to the extent that in terms of Section 40B of the Act, we are allowed to generate revenue. And that is why you're seeing that improvement. Also to indicate that there was no irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure during the period under review. In the previous years, to a large extent, this area was more impacted upon by a lack of funds, particularly when we approach February and March each year. And as I indicated, we turned the corner and were able to come out positive in terms of this area. The financial statements were prepared on a going concern basis, and that was ratified by the auditors. The committee would understand that in the previous financial years, the going concern status of Productivity SA was under serious threat precisely because we always would find that we're sitting with a deficit as we go into the end of the financial year, as well as the liabilities exceeding assets. And in the previous years, you would find that the liabilities exceeds assets by over 30 million rand. And thanks to the DG for having waived the debt that we owed to the unemployment insurance fund due to our previous sins around 2012 up to 2015. We've cleared this challenge, and now we are on a positive footing. And also to indicate that as at the 31st of March, the entity recorded an accumulated surplus of 11.3 million from an accumulated deficit of 13.6 million. And we believe this is a big achievement for us. And to the extent that the entity moved from a technically insolvent to a solvent financial position. I think, Chair, I would stop at this so that I could allow for the committee to engage us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair of the Board and CEO. It's just unfortunate that the CFO, because of the problems of technology, he couldn't then present, and we hear his voice. That was on a lighter note. I will, honorable members, there is the presentation by the Productivity SA, the narrative by the chair of the board, and therefore the also the outlining the narrative of their financials by the CEO. Can I see time to check hands? Any takers?
Michael Beck.
I see your hand, sir.
Thank you.
It's Honorable Begram, it's Honorable Mkhonto, and it's Honorable Mdabe for now in that order. You may speak, Honorable Begram.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that report. It's appreciated. I do want to say up front that Productivity SA is desperately needed in today's times. So it's not an entity that we must take lightly. It is desperately needed. However, we in South Africa face, in the world scale, the worst productivity in the world. So we need to start thinking more laterally. And I'm asking Productivity SA to maybe look at a lateral overview of the whole thing. Just some thoughts from me about possibly deregulating small business, about small businesses divorcing from the bargaining councils. What about working with the CCMA when there's retrenchments going on? Those sort of things we need to have a look at and see if there's something we can do. We also obviously need to work more carefully with the education department, like they've got the dual education system in Germany, and we maybe should look at that. It's now about time, because we need productivity. I've also noticed in my going around from daily basis that the trade unions are not in favor of Productivity SA. They don't want to work with them. And I think there needs to be some sort of outreach to the trade unions to see if they can somehow work hand in glove with Productivity SA. It would be great to see that, because at least we'll have staff that are more productive. I want to congratulate Productivity SA on the audit and the fact that they are trying to raise money. Well done. And also the turnaround. So, look, there's a lot of positives compared to what we saw last year. So it's a good report all in all. So thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Begram. Honorable Mkhonto.
Thanks, Chair. Greetings to the chairperson of the board, the CEO and the CFO of Productivity SA. Chair, there is a slide that the CEO flighted that talks about performance per strategic objective 2020-2021. That's where I want to start. I don't know whether he can be able to flag that one.
CEO, are you there?
Yeah, yes, Chair.
I think it's this one. Thank you, Mr. Mtibi. The first strategic objective is saying strengthen the institutional capacity of Productivity SA to deliver on its mandate and be financially sustainable. And that was done 100%, meaning that there was now capacity, finances were in order. That is why I'm asking about then what happened to number three. When you have capacity and your financial status is in order, is then a big question, why you failed to achieve strategic objective number three? Maybe because of the things that we've experienced in the country and in the whole world, a smaller percentage maybe, to me, that will be understandable. But maybe, Chair, we have to thank them for being frank to us, but they failed to achieve this one, because it takes people who have guts and honest to put such things in reports. That will be my first question, Chair. And then the competitiveness index. I believe, Chair, as Productivity SA has improved in many aspects of their performance, I believe that next year we will get a better report in the competitiveness index, because as it is now, it is not looking good at all. Maybe they were not focusing on it. They were focusing somewhere else, because looking from their previous report, they had many things to focus on. Maybe if now they can be able to focus on that one. And then the chairperson of the board talked about, Professor Mutwaba talked about the industrialization of the economy and massive increase in local production. Prof, we can focus on the majority of our people, and those are the SMEs. Those are the majority. If maybe the industrialization can now focus on that level of the economy, maybe we can do better. That will be my inputs and questions, Chair. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mugabe. And after Honorable Mugabe, it will be Honorable Nonsel.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the well-presented report from Productivity SA. Thanks to the Chair and the CEO. Mine, Chair, is in relation to the comment made by the CEO in relation to the 200,000 businesses that were closed down and the loss of 1.5 million jobs that were lost. based on the report that he glanced through or he received it from CEDA. Now, CMA, on the other hand, on their report, there seem to be 58,000 jobs that were saved out of about 75,000 retrenchments that was on their radar. Now, to me, it seems there is a gap in the coordination of information as government, not only as the Department of Employment and Labor with its entities, but as government as a whole on the economic cluster, that the information that we have or that gets put in the public space seem to be not properly aligned and properly coordinated in such a way that we would have a sense of what is happening I'm raising this, Chair, in the context that Productivity SA should not only be, maybe I might be shooting from the hip, understanding that their mandate might be not be what I'm trying to propose here, that these 200,000 businesses that were closed down and were not supported through the TEFs as they had claimed in their responses why they did not submit or present their case to the Productivity SA so that they would be assisted. My take is that there has to be a way of trying to resuscitate, because those 200,000 businesses, there's still a gap in the economy that they should be operational and creating more jobs. Therefore, the issue of coordination has to be part of maybe a Productivity SA initiative to say, how best can we bring on board these matters, taking into account our role of the added mandate of this department to deal with the employment. That is my take, Chair. It's a comment. If Prof and the CEO can guide or have a comment on what I've said. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Nonsel.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good evening to the members and the chair and the board and the CEO of the Productivity SA. I think, Chair, it would be fair first to welcome and to appreciate the report because it really comes from a background that both the chair of the board and the CEO have properly reported on, particularly the areas where there was the negative outcomes in terms of its financial position, and including areas where the entity could, in fact, not make positive strides. Having said so, Chair, I'm just checking on the questions that have been raised with regard to the program, that is the BTNR areas, particularly those that are not achieved. Whether, for instance, is it not going to, because I'm not debating on the reasons, because I think they are fairly stated, the reasons that led to the failures. Whether, for instance, the entity would not consider a proposal that says, can this be the report, the areas of reporting on an ongoing basis, so that we, in fact, by the end of the term, we are, in fact, hands-on as a portfolio committee on the performances or otherwise of the areas that the committee or the entity has reported on, that is, that are covered under that program of BTNR. That's the first point. The reason, Chair, why I'm making that proposal, because these areas that have been identified are areas that where they have made a positive turnaround. It would mean that some of the areas that Honorable Mdabe has raised, particularly those that talk to job creation, would in fact, by extension, would have in part been addressed. The second point is with regard to the also, just to congratulate the entity again for the unqualified audit opinion, but also just to check on the management, that is the political management of the processes, whether, for instance, because at a certain point I did read in one newspaper where there seemed to be a report to an extent that in the entity, there could be some misunderstandings between its leadership and the executive authority. I'm not asking for the details. All I'm asking is whether, for instance, such challenges, have they been laid to rest, so that if they are not, then we can maybe through an agreed process be taken into confidence, so that we help smooth the process, so that it does not go forward impact negatively on the good work so far that the entity has made. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Mine is really to commend the work that this entity has done through the leadership of the board, which is then led by Professor Dwaba and its CEO and CFO and all board members and the staff, but also the Department of Employment and Labor, in also the supportive role that they have provided to this entity. And I think the workshop that we held in February has really made us to really, myself in particular, because that's what I once said to the minister, that when we talk about productivity, SA, I mean, at the time, sea of confusion. And I think that workshop created an opportunity for all of us, for the board members of Productivity SA, to make us, to empower us, and also us empowering them in terms of our understanding, and also that of the department and its leadership, both the ministry and in the administration. I'm going to ask a question which may not be related to this presentation, but also related to it in another way. July, this country saw what I will term an economic unrest, which majority of workplaces and were destroyed, and jobs were then lost. Some of them are recovering. How do you see your role as Productivity SA in ensuring that workers, employers, trade unions in that space understand what then productivity means? I'm raising that because the workers will panic. And I think Honorable Bagram has raised this. They will panic because of the situation and the environment that they are coming from. They are panicked because they will think that, oh, because when you talk about productivity in the mind of the workers, as we have said in the workshop, is that productivity, then it's retrenchment. Whereas now, I think that it is more important and necessary that workers are made to understand what then productivity means. Now that their lives and their livelihood was at stake, some I don't think that they are going to be able to get, but those that have managed to they are going to manage to go back to work, and also ensuring that the state, Minister Ngesi, really take an effort and a more serious interaction or engagement. What Comrade Mdabe has raised is very important in terms of the coordination of information and its alignment, because it talks about maybe the weaknesses in the state as a whole in terms of the information coordination. That's why I'm saying it's not part of this, but I'm just interested. I want to be opportunistic and take that just to see and to hear how do you how are you taking that? We will allow you to respond. Please take into account that we have been here since this morning at 9 o'clock. We are from plenary, and try and be more pointed and straight to the point on the questions that and comments that we have made. Over to, I don't know who's going to start, whether it's going to be the chair, and then allow the CEO to come. But we congratulate, we hope that you're not going to drop the ball. When you come in the next presentation, we would like to see an improvement, which is at a higher pedestal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members, all of you. I think for the engaged manner in which you are responding to us, I think indeed for me it's also a demonstration of how you have an appreciation of the work that we are trying to do and that the team is doing. The CEO will come in, and I'm also trying to ensure that we are quick, Chair, because rest is also a very important part of productivity. If you don't rest, you cannot be as productive as you should be. So we must make sure that that happens. So, Chair, I'm going to cover just some areas in terms of the gaps relating to information raised by the Honorable Member Mdabe. I'll let the CEO deal with that because they work very closely with the CCMA. But what I do want to mention is that you will recall at the workshop that one of the things we impressed upon you was to help us to have some policy changes that if and when there's going to be any retrenchment and people start giving notices to the CCMA, they must have given a notice to us as Productivity SA as well, so that we know that this is happening and we can intervene timely to check whether those retrenchments are because of economic hardship that is real, or is it operational inefficiencies and high levels of unproductivity? So we need that to get more emphasis. The issue of industrialization, I want to stress, Honorable Mkonto, when you talk about the majority of our people, you are absolutely spot on. But you must remember, again, we mentioned in the workshop that 65% of our country is in informality. The majority of SMMEs that are closing are in informality. South Africa has two economies, the highly industrialized, that is small, about 30%, and the highly unindustrialized, which is the informal one, that we need to act in. And as long as Productivity SA is under-resourced, because I think we also need to make a distinction, because it could be misleading that we say we've improved our institutional capacity and therefore we are now working well. What we mean is that we've cleaned up everything we can possibly clean up. We've done everything that as a board and as operators we can do, but what we do not have is the funds to, for example, employ the people that need to be employed. We've got high levels of people that have vacancies that we cannot work on. And I think the CEO can elaborate on that as well. But I also want to cover something very important that was raised, because when you talk about the changed role of the department to be an employment department, I think there's a lot that has not been done for that. We also wrote a paper on how the Employment Services Act that creates Productivity SA would be the best way to actually give some kind of direction to how we as a country can be able to become truly a Department of Employment and Labor. We're still not a Department of Employment and Labor, we're a Department of Labor, because that part is still missing in action. And so for me as well, when you ask, I think, Honorable Mkonto, on issues of why the performance, again, the CEO will respond to that. But you'll remember that I mentioned that we could not get to some businesses. They refused for us to get in because there were COVID lockdowns. They were scared that we're going to get them sick. They were scared that we come on the work floor. It was very difficult for us to take the fear away from them for us to come onto the work floor. So it was a huge, huge problem. But here's the thing that I want us to please, I think, understand. When Honorable Mkonto says the competitiveness index she believes will get better next year, I'm sorry to depress you, it will not. That is not up to Productivity SA. It's up to the country. So we are enjoining the country to join us in doing the right thing. So if you look at that slide, those areas that I was mentioning that I picked out deliberately on government efficiency, on business efficiency, on infrastructure, those are not in our ambit to do. Those are things we are pointing out for the country to do. The country, though, is not listening. The country is not working with us to do that. So it's difficult to get everybody. We are doing the best we can with our partnerships, with our strategic partnerships, with academia, with trade unions, with everybody. But if everybody, for example, in the economic cluster doesn't do what they're supposed to do, in spite of our telling them, we continue sliding from 62, we might be 63 next year. So it's only when we galvanize and get everybody to do what they're supposed to do. And I also want to mention, I think when the Honorable Nontsele talk about misunderstandings between leadership and the executive authority, I think that one is a very complicated matter that would require, I think, a different conversation, a different workshop on its own. It's something that needs to be visited, I think, rather sooner than later. But safe to say that we had a promise made to us in March to have an urgent engagement with the minister. That has not happened. So the minister made a promise. And we've been very pushy. We can push up to a point. You can't push beyond. We've sent many letters because we asked for an engagement and the minister said we will have it on an urgent basis. But that was in March. We're in November now. So if we make a promise in March and in November it hasn't happened, it's unlikely that we're ever able to do anything because we're not moving. So I think the CEO must come in because I'm worried about the time. And if I've forgotten other things, we can always come back and have written reports on that. CEO, can you please finish off on those issues?
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members.
Oh, sorry. I would have thought that the Chair will respond on my question about which is outside, about how do you, in light of what has happened in July, how do you think that you can...
You are right, Chair. Sorry, Chair. Apologies. Chair, it is, again, unfortunately, I'm going to start by the under-resourcing. So we have, I can't remember, the CEO must remind me, I think we have over 17 vacancies, 17. But you are right that we have a role to play. What is our role to play, Chair? Our role to play is to play some kind of an educational role in addition to our contributing to the creation of employment, in addition to the contribution of making sure that retrenchments don't happen, in addition to making sure that competitiveness grows, we need to educate our people. We can't leave it to the lap of the gods that they will understand that productivity does not mean that it's a sword working to strike them, because that sometimes is the biggest problem. It's an ideological misfit and a misunderstanding that we are talking about total factor productivity. But for us to do that, to go beyond just working in the regions in terms of what we can afford to do, we need the resourcing that we've asked Parliament to appropriate more funds to us on. What we are trying to do to try and ameliorate that problem is to have the strategic partners we are having, Chair, where we are engaging and running. I must say, Chair, I'm very proud of my team. I'm very, very, very proud of my board, very proud of my operational people, because what they are able to do with very, very little, highly being under-resourced, is to go, for example, and partner with entities like BUSA, BBC, as I've said, the universities. And what that does for us is that it gives us that bandwidth, that runway that we don't have, because if BUSA runs a webinar, all of a sudden on productivity, which has never happened before in the history of Productivity SA. They've run a few webinars now with us. They've sent messages to their members that I see. So we are able to cover far more. So when we work with our colleagues at trade unions, we use our members on the board, because that's the other thing that was not happening, is that our members, the members of the board, were not working as stakeholder educators to go back home to their constituencies, COSATU, FEDUSA, and NACTU, to go and say to them, hey, we sit on the board representing you. So for heaven's sake, let's work together to make sure that we spread the word, because that doesn't cost money. That doesn't require money. It just requires us to be ambassadors and champions, as all of us as South Africans should be. For example, we came out of October, which is Productivity Month. We had a productivity summit, I think, on the 27th something of October. We also had a presentation to Parliament for research on just transition. We've been very busy. So whenever we get an opportunity, we use the spreader effect, chair, to get to as many people as possible in the hope that we, as agents, we're going to catch someone or some people who are also going to spread the word on our behalf. But it's very limited what we can do on our own, chair. We need help. We need funding. We need to employ more people. And there's no way we can have this productivity revolution that the country needs and the recalibration that the country needs without that assistance, chair. I hope that given the time constraints is enough, so the CEO can also cover the other aspects, chair.
Okay. No, thank you. Thank you, Prof.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to talk to the issues relating to working with others, particularly within government, and that touches on the issues raised by Honorable Bahrain and then also Honorable Mdabe. As part of the things that we do, as the chairperson indicated, the paper that we produced last year was actually beginning to give shape what we think is good practice. Because we researched what happens in Asia, we researched what happens in Scandinavian countries, and it was clear. If government does not collaborate with business and labor, we're not going to. So we have moved, now we're working with the Department of Small Business Development. We're working with the CCMA, we're working at an advanced level with the DTIC, as well as economic development departments in the program, I mean, the provinces, as well as in the districts and the metros. So that issue about the lateral thinking, I think that's exactly where we are. The chairperson has indicated on the board we have two members representing trade unions, and part of the things that we do, particularly with the outreach programs, is to, as advised in one way or another by the committee as well, is to simplify the issues of productivity. Because quite often workers think productivity is about job destruction. So we have turned that around. All our messaging are about total factor productivity. Honorable Mkonto, if you look into the presentation, you're going to find particularly the slides where we are making a thorough expansion on the informality challenge. We've identified the challenges. You can see that if you look at the spread of small SMEs, the unfortunate thing is over 63% are in Gauteng, Western Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. So we have no alternative but to go to the rural provinces, which need us the most. So part of our program and APP, you will find that we are focused on that. And that is why our focus into the future is working within the district development model, looking at the 44 districts, and in those districts, target the most marginalized enterprises so that we support them. The issue of information and data, Honorable Mdabe, it's not wrong that the CCMA gave what they gave, and we're giving you this statistics as per Statistics SA. What happens is the CCMA will capture the companies that report to them in terms of Section 189A. And then we're able to work with them in adjudicating in terms of the temporary employer employee relief scheme. And then those companies are channeled into the business turnaround and recovery. And thanks to the department that they proclaimed that for companies to participate in the TERS, they should participate in the productivity as a business turnaround and recovery program. So the numbers are different precisely for that reason. And as the chairperson said, we had a discussion in the department, and there is a a thinking towards making it mandatory that every big company, irrespective of numbers, should report so that we're able to capture appropriate data. Honorable Nontsele, it's definite. We will continue reporting on the work that we do in the business turnaround and recovery program. The board has indeed given us exactly the same instruction. On a quarterly basis, we report to the board, and I think we'll create a mechanism that the report, once sanctioned by the board, it gets into your hands, into the committee's hands, because we give a comprehensive analysis of what the challenges are, what are the interventions are, and we are able to show improvements. I can assure you, we're seeing drastic improvement in terms of those companies that we assist. However, because of capacity constraints, we're not able to reach everywhere, but we're doing everything in our power to arrive at that. Part of our intervention programs, all our programs, be it the competitiveness improvement program, as well as the business turnaround and recovery program, at the center of it is what we call workplace collaboration, precisely to empower workers to be able to understand issues of productivity. So you'll see in the plan, in the report, we're talking about the number of productivity champions that we trained, and most of them are workers, and the target is down there where we are needed the most. I'm hopeful, Chair, that I've covered all the issues. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Professor, Chair, and the CEO, and the team, and all other board members. We'll appreciate, on behalf of the committee, I think we'll appreciate if we can also be circulated the papers that you have produced on the areas that you have cited, so that we also see how best can we then have an understanding and more engagement with the economic cluster in particular, in terms of our counterparts as the committees. And I just want to say thank you very much. It was quite an exciting presentation, and we hope to see you, and want to apologize for the challenge that we have created in terms of change of dates. I did say to you, Chair, that unfortunately we will have to do that. It's not because we were deliberate, and want to apologize for any inconvenience that we may have caused. So I know, I'm sure through the office of either the DG of the Minister or the Minister, we are interested in those papers. I am interested in particular, and I hope all members are interested in those papers, because they will assist in empowering and in us moving forward. And thank you very much. Until we meet again, we will now receive the next presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the whole committee. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a good evening.
Commitment of the papers, Sawafuman. I'm a paper.
You will get all the papers, Chair. The CEO will make sure you have all of them, Chair. They will be with you, Chair, no later than close of business on Monday.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair.
Goskako.
Goskako, Chair. Bye-bye.
Bye. Mr. Sakaza, is CCMA ready?
Yes, Chair, they are here. I see them. Mr. Murajane is actually the co-second chair. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much. ungathisha ku wa unfair challenge umuntu othetha mvha kakade uthetha yonke into othethwayo ngabantu challenge yomuntu othetha mvha kuthiwa please sicela ungabi mde but yeah we that was only lighter note but please the director understand that we've been here the whole day but we are interested not that we're not going to ask questions we are but yeah thank you very much over to you
okay now thank you very much Chairperson I did promise UDG that we'll do our best to say make sure that we have dinner today. And then we'll just touch on the key aspects that have arisen from the AG and the questions that arose from there. And some of the aspects I will skip that I think you know. I will not repeat them. With me, Chairperson, I advise the DG, I am the Chairperson of the Board of the CCMA, Professor Enos Ngutshane has joined us for this presentation, together with my executive, Anna Mukharinyana, Governance and Strategy, Mthembeni Ncanano, who is the Corporate Services, and also I think I've covered Nkosi Khona Nkosi, who's the ICT, and then the Chief Audit Executive on the audit side of things has also joined us. So we have a full complement of the team, as we always honor the PC when we are called to account. And we intend to do the same at the level that you expect us to, but very economical with time. That we will do our best to make sure that we meet that standard, Chairperson. And then the Chairperson of the CCMA Governing Body is a new Chairperson, not that new, started last year, technically December, but because of COVID, you could not have met him. And he's here today. I will ask him to switch on his camera so that you can see him, so that the committee can also see him. He will present the formal side of the there he is. That's our chairperson, chairperson of the portfolio committee. That's the chairperson of the CCMA, Professor Enos Ngutshane. We work very well in ensuring that the entity becomes what it is. Thank you very much, chairperson. You will switch off the video and switch it on when you present. Chairperson, there's a number of slides, as you may have seen, over 40 number of slides, but we won't talk to all of them, as I said. The chairperson will speak to you on the slide 1 up to 12. And then from then almost up to 18, I will not talk to those because those slides is the narrative of the programs and the pillars that you'll be seeing in the presentation that he'll be presenting about. So I won't talk to them as to their content, which is very important for context, especially in relation to some of the questions that AG has raised and some of the questions that members have raised. Particularly, I will comment briefly on the question that I think my colleague, Mr. Mutunye, has responded to Honorable Mdabe's question. I will just add an important dimension to that question when we're dealing with job saving. That question is a very valid question. I think I did raise this point at some point about a coordinated joint reporting on certain aspects. But there are other factors that are affecting that outside that, which I think will bring to your attention. And then for future process, we'll see how we coordinate. So I will touch on those at the right time. And then Ngawage, CFO, will talk on the finances. I'll make it. I'm quite conversant and content with the content of the report. There are certain important aspects arising out of that I will touch on when she's done. and some of the questions that Chairperson that have been raised in as far as the AG is concerned on the cost side, the irregular expenditure side. CFO will touch on that. I will touch in addition to that if there's other things that she may have missed, but we have listened to the presentation thoroughly. We've made those notes and we will respond so that members are satisfied on the questions that you've raised, that we have answered them to your satisfaction and give you the true picture of the state of the organization called the CCMA. That will then conclude our presentation. Chairperson, at the time of questioning, we will answer all questions. And if there's questions that we may need assistance, the team is here so that we make sure that we don't leave with any questions unanswered. And having said so, Chairperson, and without taking too much time, let me offer to Chairperson. He will use my slides. I will move the slides for him because I'm sharing. I will move the slides for him to assist him to present, and then I will take over from there. If it's okay with you, Chairperson, that's how we wish to present our annual report.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
All right. Thank you very much. Prof, I know that we have Prof Ndwaba who presented for productivity. I have you as my prof also presenting for the CCMA. So we're making progress in the portfolio committee and the Dell family. Thank you very much. Over to you. Over to you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Prof, for that brief introduction. Let me also take this opportunity to thank the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Labor and the members of the committee as a whole. We are quite aware that you started very early this morning at 9 o'clock. We are therefore not going to be wasting a lot of your time. I'm sure you've seen our presentation. It covers a few items that have been highlighted by the director. The first one being the constitutional, legislative, and the policy mandate of the entity. Secondly, we'll be looking at the enabling legislation and the mandatory functions. Please don't move the presentation first. I'm just doing the introduction. Enabling legislation and mandatory functions of the entity. It will also look at the strategy overview and progress of the entity, programs of the entity, the non-financial results, the annual performance plan, the financial performance results, as already indicated by the director. It will also look at the program implementation and the funding. Lastly, it will focus on the audited results of the entity as a whole. Okay, let's go back to the presentation. The CCMA is presenting its annual report, the report that covers the year 2020 and 2021, in line with the requirements of Section 55(1)(d) of the PFMA. Now, in line with the financial year itself, the CCMA's implementation of this program, of course, started from the year 2020. It will see us going through year 2024 and 25 in terms of our five-year Imvuselelo plan, which we also term the revival strategy. Of course, the CCMA has revised the program itself, or if you like, the annual performance plan during the financial year due to the deadly and debilitating effects of COVID-19 and the budgetary constraints that we are still faced with. Now, despite all these challenges, Chairperson, the CCMA continues to strive to make a meaningful contribution towards labor peace and equity as per strategic intent of the Imvuselelo strategy. Of course, this is in line with the sustainable development goals of the United Nations that talks to decent work and economic growth. CCMA's job, of course, in terms of saving jobs, we have seen our effort in making sure that we address the issues of making sure that the jobs are saved. As you can see, we've come up with an effort where we saw about 58,165 jobs saved from the likely ones that were supposed to be retrenched, totaling 138,816, with the actual retrenchments record standing at 74,747. The total number of referrals that came through the system during this financial year, of course, we recorded the number at 154,143. Now, central to the work that is delivered by the year in review, these were extensive planning processes which were meant to reposition the work of the CCMA appropriately in responding effectively to the CCMA's legislative and discretionary mandate. Lastly, on the executive summary, Chairperson, we are committed to labor peace and equity, even more important, more especially now during this turbulent economic condition that we're facing. And this aspect, Chair, talks to the sustainable goal number 16, which talks to promoting peaceful and inclusive society for sustainable development. Thank you. Move on. Now, in terms of the constitutional legislation, as indicated that we'll deal with it in terms of our policy as well, you can see that the CCMA continues to be a statutory body that was established in terms of Section 112 of the Labor Relations Act of 1995, as amended. Now, in terms of Section 113 of the Labor Relations Act, the CCMA remains to be an independent of state, any political party, trade unions, employer and employer organizations, Federation of Trade Unions, or Federation of Employer Organizations. We are truly an independent state entity. And sitting right at the center of our mandate as the CCMA is the Labor Relations Act that focuses with its four pillars of economic development, social justice, labor peace, and work democratization. Move on. The mandatory functions of the entity focuses on those five areas: to conciliate and arbitrate workplace disputes, assist with the establishment of the workplace forums, compile and publish statistics and information about its activities, administer the Essential Services Committee, consider applications for accreditation and subsidies of the bargaining councils and the private agencies. And we've done very well in these areas, Chairperson. Move on. Now, the discretionary functions are outlined. There are nine of them. Supervise the ballots of trade unions and employer organizations, provide training and information relating to primary objectives of the Labor Relations Act, advise a party to a dispute about the process to be followed, offer and to resolve disputes that have not been referred to the CCMA. Chair, those are listed there. They are presented in our report that we've given to you. Let's not waste time by taking you through all of them. Thank you. Now, looking at the employment law framework, you can see that we've categorized it into two, looking at the South African Constitution and also looking at the International Labour Organization policies and conventions. The South African Constitution will focus on the Labour Relations Act, your National Minimum Wage Act, your Basic Condition of Employment Act. Now, when we talk to the ILO, we relate in terms of the Employment Equity Act, Unemployment Insurance Act, and the Occupational Health and Safety Act. This is a very important act, as you know, we call it Act 85, which covers the entity right from the green area up to the highest section of the organization itself in terms of managing the risk and the safety of the employees. Thank you. Now, our overview strategy outlines a few of these aspects, starting with our vision and mission. You can see our vision. We want to be a world-class institution that promotes labor market stability, social justice, and job security. Very important vision. The mission itself looks at giving effect to everyone's constitutional right and freedom. What are the strategic pillars, Chairperson? There are three of them. First is to optimize the organization itself in terms of efficiency, in terms of making sure that we manage our budget and, you know, our IT systems in a very efficient manner. We enhance labor market stability as pillar number two, and pillar number three, support strategy implementation in terms of good governance within the organization as a whole. Thank you. Imvuselelo strategic programs, there are five of them. First one, it's high performance institution. We want to be proactive and relevant to the labor market intervention. We specialize in interventions and supports institutions. Number four, efficient and quality dispute resolution and the enforcement of services. Lastly, effective strategy management and governance of the total entity. Thank you. Chair, I'm going to be stopping on that slide and allowing the director to proceed, taking us through the programs, and the CFO will focus on the financial performance results, the implementation and funding, and in terms of the audited results. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, for that submission. And as the foundation to what we're going to present moving forward, Chairperson, these are the results appearing. As you can see, this is over a period of 5 years and up to 2021. The progression, as you can see, if you look at the number of targets that we may have missed or not achieved over a period of 5 years, they're quite minimal. This is a reflection of our commitment and in terms of quality performance for purposes of delivery or service delivery. This is the graphical presentation of how the graph looks like in terms of the performance I just spoke about over the period of 5 years. Moving along, if I go to slide 22, this is a reflection of the current financial year and the different programs and how they've performed. And I will not take you through that for time purposes, Chairperson. The bottom line is that the total achieved as presented is 84% and not achieved is 16%. And I will then present to, I'm sure the members have read, these are the reasons for the targets that have not been achieved. I will not spend too much time unless there's specific questions. The one that I just wanted to highlight, the financial one, it was supposed to be a 1.1:1, but we got to 0.89. And this is one of the targets that was affected by the cash reduction at the CCMA because it had a direct impact in COVID, so that one we could not achieve. The second one, which is the positive rating on participation evaluation, this one, it was an evidence issue. As a result, there was no performance in that regard, so we did not want to continue to fight that. And then the rest, I think, is self-explanatory, Chairperson. I'll proceed to slide 25. 24, it's a continuation of explanation. The one that is on the screen, which we had intended to have 100% performance, we could not because there was no that we received. This target is dependent on a referral, then we can achieve that, so we couldn't. And the slight percentage difference on the quality of awards is the actual outcome. We've set certain standards that it must meet. It is being issued, it is being served, there's no issue in as far as service delivery is concerned. But this target, we always want to make sure that when we issue it, the award is enforceable and it is of the quality that we have set ourselves. So, and that's an important target for us. And then this is a very important slide, slide 25. A very important one, because some of the questions that arose because of this slide. I'll just talk to the first three chapters, and the rest, yeah, it can just be read. On the first one, you will see that the priority we're talking about contributes to outcome three, the economy and employment. And we received 154,000 referrals. But of great importance is to understand that in terms of compliance on this statutory target, we achieved a 99% achievement in as far as the compliance is concerned. And also the rendering of awards that I spoke about, which is an important part because that's the outcome of the entire process that you do. And we've served them on time to parties with a minus one a percentage point that we missed for it to be 100%. So that's very important also to understand that the referrals that we're talking about were largely affected by COVID lockdown from level 5. That's when we switched to online processes and digital platforms. And we're quite conversant with the side effect of that process, but we had to react that way. And that's what we did. But it's proving to be quite successful. But we have to find a way to be an inclusive process to make sure that those that don't have digital platforms are able to access our platforms very well, like everyone else. I will not talk to bullet three because there is a slide that talks to the sectors of referral that we are talking about. The last bullet, Chairperson, it's important that it must always be remembered that the CCMA has 35 bargaining councils that extends our mandate of function that is based on certain sectors, public service sector, the public health, and the road freight that the minister spoke about is also accredited by the CCMA. So our oversight function also to make sure that we achieve the purpose of the LRA extends to those bargaining councils, because we accredit them to do what ordinarily would be done by the CCMA. So it's quite an important slide to note. And then the referral pattern you will see on the right-hand side over the period of 5 years, how the numbers have been. Of course, it's affected by different factors for those referrals. I will not talk to this slide, Chairperson, slide 26. These are about in terms of the Act and the referrals. These are the sectors that I mentioned on the two slides earlier that shows you the different sectors. The high referring is the business and professionals. And all of that, those that are not covered below are also captured there. The numbers as at the current financial year. I will then proceed to slide number 28. This is an important slide also because it has to do with the amendment of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act together with the introduction of the National Minimum Wage. Our mandate still remains there. There are certain challenges now with the less capacity to enforce the National Minimum Wage Act and disputes of wages and all of that relating to basic conditions. But in as far as the year under review, we've received 24,000 referrals. As you would know, that the referrals for the National Minimum Wage, we have to use the basic conditions to do so, because the National Minimum Wage does not have its own dispute resolution clause. So there is that statutory dependency that is created by that. I will then proceed to slide 31, Chairperson. Now, this is extremely important. And as far as the questions that were asked, I think I will load the response to the question that was asked by Honorable Ndad on the question of the productivity and the likes. You will see that Productivity SA, in the first bullet there at the top, that Productivity SA plays an important role in our single adjudication committee that deals with the normatives. One of the challenges that we faced is a challenge of having to explain to the public that there's two types of TERS. There's the normal TERS that we know, that's where the CCMA is together with Productivity SA, UIF, as part of that committee that makes decisions. And there's the COVID-19 related TERS, which is adjudicated by UIF. So it's different from this one. So the figures that you see are figures that are just for the normal TERS, not the COVID-19 TERS. You will see that in 2021, we received about 121 applications, and then we considered 88 applications, and then only 22 were recommended, and others were defective and withdrawn, right? And then if you look at the total number of beneficiaries, it's 3,531 that benefited from that. And the total funding that is allocated for that is 166,134,080. The booster program, we've spoken about that in the past. That's very important. And I'll deal with the Mdabe matter also on the slide that talks on the dashboard, because it's also provided there very well as well. Here, Chairperson, I won't spend time. Governance, it's throughout today, and when AG presented, at the center of what they're talking about, it's about governance. And one of the things then, as the Chairperson presented in terms of our strategic pillars and also our programs, you will see that governance and strategy is quite important and contained in that. That's where Anna is on the governance and strategy. You will see that they've quite succeeded in the CCMA for us to achieve a 5 CCMA risk maturity rating, which is quite important. And that is important for us, because it contributes quite significantly into a well-run organization that understands governance and its components and other pillars that is resting on. So that's quite important. This is supported by the second bullet, which deals with the 48 legislations as part of the compliance regulatory universe. So we are looking at all legislation that are affecting us. That's why when the AG talks about compliance in their report, we take it serious, because we have 48. The PFMA is one of them, but it's not the only legislation that we're looking at. So that's why for us it's quite important. That's why it was helpful for us to not have achieved, which I'll talk about slightly later, in terms of the high level of our overall performance in our audit. So that's very important. I think it's important that members note that we've done quite well in as far as governance and process of the CCMA, because it's very healthy. And we want to keep it that way. Our risk management is very healthy. We're happy with that. And then the others, I will not talk to the complaints. We have about 299 we received, and then 265 were resolved. And so we're quite okay when it comes to that. I'll proceed to slide 34. Chairperson. I'm a graphics. Now, slide 34, this is the dashboard. I want to go right in the middle, the 42% job saved that Honorable Mdabe spoke about, on that very good point that he raised. One of the things that we must never lose sight of, that when we are talking about job saved, and we've been consistent in this submission, it's only referrals that we've received, like Mr. Mutunya presented. It's those that we received at the CCMA, and this is how we've performed. We've set ourselves a target there of what we must achieve in as far as the job saved is concerned. And if you look at the total number of the job saved, it's not just individuals. These are families that we're talking about. The Labor Relations Act that you as the legislature have made, at its heart, is job security. This is what the Constitutional Court has confirmed. So if we are able to save 58,000 in a collaborated function and together with Productivity SI, that I think is worthy of an applause, even if we have to do it ourselves, because we feel good that 58,165 people still have jobs in the country. And if you take into account what productivity reports, and if you look at that jointly, as Dole family, it's something that we can take pride in. This is one effort that if it were possible, but the resources don't allow, we would quite expand it, even our partnership with productivity SI. I think at some point, I think I did present Chairperson in the past that we do have a memorandum of agreement that we signed with productivity so that on matters of job saving, job creation, and productivity too, and all other facts, because they are experts in that. We are lawyers and commissioners. A combination of that produces this type of results. And I'm quite happy with that. And what needs to be noted is that there are retrenchments that you'll find they happen, but they're not referred to the CCMA. There will be retrenchments that happen that are not referred to the productivity SI. So every time we present statistics, we must always remember that the statistics do not represent those employees, those workers. You have sometimes single employees being retrenched, sometimes it's less than 10, and you know what the LRA provides on such. So there are certain legislative imperatives that create that environment, but at no point would we present this report that it is a complete picture of the state of retrenchments in the country. So that consolidation of information, research, and credible information, as Honorable Mdabe said, is quite critical. So an integrated approach is necessary. And it's a matter of enhancing what already exists between the CCMA and productivity SI. And finally, on that slide, you will know, Chairperson, that the settlement rate, we've been quite consistent and very successful with that, sitting at 70%, as you can see there. Now, Chairperson, that should... I will not talk to this slide because it's our outreach program where we do training and capacity building, you know, all of that. This not only was killed by COVID, but we don't have resources to do as we used to do. If you look at the numbers in the past, and yeah, you'll see that the numbers are different. But it's a very wonderful program of teaching people their rights, how to reflect. For example, the issue of the vaccinations that we are talking about and the type of cases that we've received so far. As of Friday, we had about 10 cases that we've received. I did one conciliation on that. And as I was busy presenting in a different platform, SABC and everywhere, we received additional ones, like three while I was talking, we got three additional ones of employees that are dismissed due to vaccinations. But during these programs that we do on these outreach programs, we normally teach people about those kinds of things. And it does have a positive impact in terms of referrals. So, Chairperson, that is as fast as I could run it, but being comprehensive in as far as the non-financial performance results of the CCMA, as promised that the CFO will present on the financial performance of the results, I'll make certain concluding remarks and dealing with some of the direct questions that came from the AG. Kiribona, even that other one, that arose out of the AG's question today. And then I will conclude afterwards. And then that will conclude our presentation after that, Chairperson. And with your permission, Chairperson, I will ask CFO Kiribon Mashakhomu to present on the financial performance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Director. And good evening to the Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members of the Committee, to the DG as well, and the colleagues at large who are with us in this presentation today. I'll take a cue from how the Director presented and try and elevate the key issues from the financial performance, as the presentation has already been shared with the Committee. Director, if we can just go to slide 37, which talks about our revenue for the financial year. In this particular slide, what the slide is talking to us about is showing us that we had plans to have revenue of 955 million for the financial year. And in that total revenue that we had planned to have, we only could not collect about 130 of it, which is way less than 1% of what we had actually planned to collect for the financial year. I think what really stands out from this revenue collection slide for us is the under-collection that we had from our investment income, and this is purely due to the economic conditions based on the investments that we were making as an organization on the grants that we received from the Department of Employment and Labor. There was also a slight under-collection on the funding that we received from the Department of Employment and Labor with regards to the sheriff funding. This specifically helps us with the enforcement of awards as we do the work that we need to do, because this is also part of the critical activities that we embark on as an activity, as an organization. As far as services rendered is concerned, there we slightly collected over what we had planned to collect, and this was due to mainly the discretionary functions that we had offered, and revenue was collected from those discretionary services. The funding that we collect from the discretionary services, it's purely on a cost recovery basis. We don't make huge margins on it. So we are just making sure that where users need services, we provide those services in terms of our discretionary services, and then we recover the cost of those services as and when we offer those services to them, particularly things like training. It's one of the key activities that we do in that particular area. If we can move to slide 38, which talks to our utilization of the funding that we had for the financial year, you will see that we almost spent the entire budget that we have, with an exception of 4.8 million, which was not fully utilized in the financial year, which makes the not spending just below 1% of the total budget that we had for the financial year. What is key on this slide is, although there is an amount reflected as not spent, in terms of the instructions that we have from National Treasury, this amount was not surrendered. Therefore, there was no surplus that was surrendered to the National Treasury. I think what really, really stands out in this particular slide is the underspending that we had on operating expenses. However, what is key also to note is that even though we had underspending on operating expenses, this is what really assisted us to deal with the overspendings that we had in areas such as case disbursement, which is the core of our business. And members will recall that as we were trying to play a balancing act with all the financial challenges that we were experiencing last year, we had to make some of the tough decisions around things like case disbursement, where things like part-time commissioners had to be suspended for a particular period so that we eventually can be in a position to actually spend within the budget that we had for the financial year. That being said, it doesn't mean that we were not able to do what we wanted to do. You will note from the presentation that the director has done, most of our efficiencies, we were still able to achieve them. For example, our conciliations, we were able to do it within 23 days. Our settlement rate was 70%. So it's one of those challenges that we had, and which was a very difficult challenge that we had in terms of the financial year. However, we still strive to make sure that we maintain financial sustainability as an organization, and at the very same time, we make sure that we still deliver on the core mandate that we have as an organization. I will then move to slide 41, Director, which talks to the audit results, which the AG has spoken quite extensively about in the morning, as far as the portfolio as a whole is concerned. So for us as the CCMA, we have received an unqualified audit opinion, and this unqualified audit opinion was there as a result of us making an adjustment on one of the line items within our financial statements, which is commitment. And we also made some adjustments on performance information in the financial year. On the area that we have made adjustment on, there has been a number of activities that we have put in place as an organization since we have received the outcome to make sure that this particular issue does not recur in the next audit that we will actually have. What do I mean by a number of activities that we have put in place? There's an audit action plan that has been developed, which is now being tracked by the governing body and the Audit and Risk Committee. And they track our performance in terms of each of the key milestones that we have indicated that we will achieve to make sure that we actually correct the misstatement that was actually identified. At the heart of the action plan that we have developed, our key focus is to make sure that we make sure that we have consistency in terms of our daily disciplines and making sure that reconciliation is done overall and it's done with the correct supporting documents that we have for the organization. I will then move to slide 42, which talks to our fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the financial year. In the financial year that we had 7 cases for fruitless and wasteful expenditure. In the 7 cases that we had, all of them were actually dealt with. We fully processed them, and where action ought to be taken, we had taken action and then made sure that at the end of the day, there is nothing that is remaining. If you look at our financial statement in terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We also have irregular expenditure, which AG has also spoken about earlier in their presentation. In the irregular expenditure that we had, when we started the year with 91 million as a balance for our irregular expenditure. And in that 91 million, we had about 57 cases that we were dealing with. When we concluded the audit, the 91 million was fully dealt with in terms of the processes that we needed to deal with. So meaning that the 11 million that the AG was actually referring to has now been fully dealt with, and it has now been removed of our books after we had implemented the remedial action that we wanted to implement based on the outcomes that we received from our loss and control function within the organization. So these cases and this 91 million, after dealing with these cases and the 91 million, our balance for the financial year that we were left with in terms of irregular expenditure was only 355, which was represented by 3 cases. In these 3 cases that were remaining at the end of the financial year, 2 had already been submitted to National Treasury for condonation after we had done the work that we needed to do. We just missed that 2 in terms of the cutoff of the financial year cutoff. So National Treasury has already condoned those 2. And then the 1 that was remaining, we were actually implementing the recommendations that we had received from the Loss and Control Committee around the remedial action on that particular case. It has now since actually also been submitted to the National Treasury. We are just waiting for a response from the National Treasury to deal with that particular case. I think this area particularly is one of the areas which the director and the board, they are very passionate about in terms of making sure that we stabilize the environment and we do not allow recurrence to happen in this area. And where recurrence has happened, we swiftly deal with it in terms of the processes that we need to follow. As such, there is a communication that has been issued within the organization that emphasizes zero tolerance on either fruitless and irregular expenditure. And it was very clear that should any staff member be found to have transgressed on any legislation that creates any of these 2 things within the organization, they will be dealt with, as we have already done so in the other cases that we have dealt with, Chairperson. I think that brings me to the end of the presentation. I'll hand over to the director to do his concluding remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, CFO. Chairperson, I want to close with these following points, which are very important. I did submit that I will do so. It's not on the slides. Number 1, the AG said that if you looked at our misstatements in the performance and the financial statements, they presented that we must improve on our in-year review of our financial performance and our performance information. We have done so. I know by now one of the findings, we have about 10. One is already closed. And there's only 1 material finding. So basically, we've got about 9 that we have to do, or 8 that we have to do in the current financial year arising out of that. So the in-year review is being implemented. I can confirm that. And also, the important thing AG said, that in terms of our performance, you saw a lot of greens for us, that we are on a greening project to make sure that everything that needs to be green must be green. And you saw our supply chain is green, IT governance is green, all of those kinds of things. I think for us and for my team, I have serious gratitude for that, because under very, very trying circumstances, very, very limited resources, they've managed to do so with COVID that came in, with the budget issues and everything else. They've managed to do so under those circumstances. So that's why we got that report. AG said there's no movement in terms of our performance. For me, to maintain what you did the previous year, that's not a bad thing. But for us, if there's to be any movement upwards, it means we are going to do clean audit. That's the only stage above us now that is left. And as advised, that actually it's that material finding relating to compliance that made us not to have a clean audit this year, because we had it until the last moment. It was taken away from us. It would have been movement forward that AG was talking about. So that's why you see we're still sitting on that legend that was presented. I'm very happy, Chairperson, while we're talking about preventing irregular expenditure and fruitless expenditure, you noted from
what has happened? Is he muted or Mr. Sakai?
It looks like the director is affected by load shedding.
Yeah, probably have load shedding.
Yes.
Oh, okay. But I think he was almost done. My concern is that questions are going to be asked, and I hope the board and the other staff will then be able to respond to questions. Can we then, if then is members are okay with that, can we then ask questions, hoping that other staff members, DG, can you assist? Is the DG
in? Chair.
Mm.
Good evening, Chair.
We are going to ask questions now, and it looks as like that the director has been affected by load shedding. Just wanted to check that in his team, will they be able? Okay.
Yes, they are officials, Chair. Okay.
Yes, that would be good.
You are right. DG will be able to respond to the questions from the members. Thank you.
Honorable members, there has been the presentation by the CCMA. Any questions? Hence,
I do have.
Honorable Bagram, can I just check who else? It's Honorable Bagram, it's Honorable Mkhonto, in that order.
May I go ahead?
Yes, Honorable Bagram.
Thank you. It's a pity, because I did want to ask Commissioner Cameron the question, but I'm sure it'll be answered. The reality is, I still believe that the CCMA is the crown jewel of the Department of Employment and Labor. This is the one that produces results when employees need the Labor Relations Act, the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, and their rights enforced. And it's always the CCMA that's the go-to place. The problem that I've experienced, and I'm sure the whole country's experienced over the past maybe 14 months now, a little bit longer, is that service delivery is being affected very, very badly because of the cut in the budget to the CCMA. And I'm hearing this from trade unions across the board, from employees. Hundreds of employees are telling me this. And I don't know how we're going to be able to ensure that the CCMA is properly resourced for the future. It's good that the DG is online here, because the DG can have a look at it. But not only is it affecting trade unions and staff, but it's also affecting the CCMA's own staff. They're facing a strike at the moment, a possible strike. I know, and I speak to staff all around the country of the CCMA. They're working 12 to 14 hours a day. The administration is under-resourced, understaffed. It's unbelievable. The commissioners are sometimes doing 5 arbitrations in one day, which is impossible. And it's affecting service delivery across the country in the CCMA. And like I said, they are the stalwarts. They're the people that stand between unfair labor practice and unfair dismissal and justice. So I just thought I'd wanted to ask that and see what they're going to do about it over the next year, because their budget gets cut again next year. Thank you.
Honorable Mkhonto.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, it will be a comment and a question together. Chair, Mr. Ngutshane talked about the decline in the number of referrals. Chair, we are all aware that during the level 4 and level 5 lockdown, many workers were in need of the services of the CCMA. So the decline logically is because of CCMA was not accessible because of the online and the digital applications that were applicable at that particular time. So, Chair, maybe we all of us have to agree that these budget cuts for the CCMA are not working for the workers, and that maybe we have to request for a budget increase. So and make sure that a CCMA is more accessible, because as it is now, CCMA is only found in big towns, where it is even difficult for people to travel to such towns. Maybe we have to look at how can we first of all have a joint effort for CCMA to have an adequate and efficient budget. And number two, what will be the strategy to make sure that it is accessible? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mkhonto. In the absence of hands, can we, Honorable Nontsele?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my point is also to welcome the report first and to appreciate the positive and the steps that have been taken. Can you me volume your question, Chair? Volume your question. Hello? Yes. Chair, the point that I wanted to check whether from the CCMA perspective, with regard to the nature of disputes, whether they can be able to ascertain that some of the disputes are as a result of the absence of the appropriate level of skill, say for instance at the shop floor, wherein this could have been dealt by shop stewards. The question therefore is not necessarily to argue on behalf of unions, but to check the extent to which CCMA itself can through partnership programs forestall such a challenge by making available support programs at the shop floor, that is through representative unions, so that you minimize the kind of workload that the commission is faced with regard to dispute resolution, and particularly the resolution of cases. Because if you look, for instance, in terms of the analysis that they have given on the extent of the disputes that have been referred, you would find that some of the disputes are essentially disputes that should have been resolved at the shop floor. Yes. So I wanted just to get that sense from the CCMA side. Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Honourable Nonsense. Yes, I want to, for myself, just but as he has talked about the level of skills in terms of the flop shop of shop floors at the workplace. The employers, is it a different thing in wanting to revenge, or are they committed in following all the processes in terms of retrenchment? Because if I just wanted to realize, thank you. I don't know what's wrong with my gadget. I'm sure it's tired. But yeah, that was my last. Can we get the response from DG? From the staff of CCMA that is around?
Chair, I don't know whether they're not affected by load shedding. I'm also sitting, but just about to sit in the dark inside. Chairperson? Oh, yes, okay. Over to you. I'm sure you heard the question.
No, I didn't hear the questions. The team just sent me some of the questions. If there are questions that I've missed, I'll be glad to respond. The one question, I understand, is relating to a strike at the CCMA. Honorable Bagelman, I'm told you, asked a question. It's reported in the media. Let me confirm outright that we did issue a joint media statement with the association or the staff association at the CCMA. There is no strike at the CCMA. There's no pending strike. There's no dispute declared for it to lead to a strike. And the notice we've issued to the media says so. It's just that the media likes to sensationalize it because somebody, a faceless person, called himself a voice of reason or something like that, took some of the discussions and engagements that are happening internally, because we have a recognition agreement. In the recognition agreement, it sets out stages at which we should be at in case of disagreement. And when the first phase was not successful, not that there's big difference, issues, we do this every year. This is no different from those years. And then when the meeting is on Friday this week for that level, and so that phase is closed. So there is no strike. And so this voice of reason took that information and, as part of what he calls the pressure to us to agree, sent it to Business Day, saying that there's a pending strike at the CCMA with an intention to pressure us to agree to whatever that is being proposed there. The approach that we took, in as far as the increments are concerned, it is in line with what government is doing. The 1.5, for example, we are following that. And the association also realizes the strain under which we are operating under at the CCMA. So So for the committee, you can note that direct report from us that there is no such a strike. And even though the media reports it at the end, that part, but they start with the drama first and they're associating it to the budget. So somebody is peddling a new narrative which we don't understand, that this and this and that and doing all of that. We don't play those kinds of politics. We just focus on work. So we've responded to that. So that part we've dealt with, Chairperson. You'll excuse me, Chairperson, I'm in the dark. So the issue of employee health and wellness, is the staff under strain? Absolutely. Is the level high? It's very high. So high such that I have, as the director, started a wellness program together within the broader wellness program that we have. I establish walking, I establish running, we're establishing running clubs, running clubs, you know, hiking. We're doing all of those kinds of programs. We've covered almost 180 or so kilometers in my team in running and walking to make sure that the stress levels do not collapse us. And also that we strike a balance between work and home, because there's a new thing called online fatigue, that we spend a lot of time on online issues with our hearing online, all our meetings, our board meetings, our exco meetings, interdepartmental are all online, and therefore you end up overworking beyond the normal because of that. So when we looked at our report of our health and wellness of our staff, it is a point where it's worrying quite significantly. Some of the functions that our staff is doing, they're doing two to three jobs per person. The commissioners are limited to 5, the part-timers, but the full-timers are unlimited in terms of the number of cases they must do. And Mr. Bagram is correct that you allocate up to 5 per day sometimes, because what we don't want to do is for workers to wait for cases to be done because we are allocating 2 or 3 cases per person. To a point, Chairperson, it will not be surprising that I'm doing cases now myself. That one of the cases relating to COVID-19, the mandatory vaccination case, I started with one last week already. And I've dealt with one that has to do with the CEO of, you know, the Health Professionals Councils, and Peter de Villiers now is here with his case and many prominent cases. And now I'm getting into the collective bargaining. So while we do what we account to you now, in as far as everything else that we've reported, what we're not telling you is that we are working beyond what your job definition says in order to make sure that we're able to do what ought to be done. The reports that you see, it is as a result of that. It's quite a challenging process. And as I'm talking to you after this, I start preparing for a case that is coming up. We're in a meeting of the provinces tomorrow to check how they are doing exactly what the AG was reporting, that we must have this in-year review processes. And we're doing that. And tomorrow we're meeting with the provinces to talk about the outcome of Parliament, the outcome of the AG report. But in the process of that, all our managers nationally, provincial managers, regional managers, they're all doing cases. I'm no exception. I'm not saying I'm a director, so I must do cases. I'm a lawyer. I'm a commissioner. I must do cases. So sometimes you have to do that. So I'll continue to do cases and see until the situation changes. And the managers, those who can, they also do cases. But it contributes badly to our health, though. That I'm not complaining. I'm responding because that's the question that is asked. It's not good. That's why I've tried to adopt these alternative methods to get the staff healthy and happy and laughing and playing, so that we can be able to balance the health, so that if they break down, you know what will happen. I don't have to tell you that. So we're going to try our best to make sure that we do that, but we can't stop the long hours. What I can confirm to you, that the long hours are not forced by management. These are voluntary engagement that the team is making, but I can see that they are really not coping. And I've started a program also called How Are You Program. The How Are You Program is a program running from the director's office. This is the program where we agreed that when you ask a fellow employee, how are you, you must be honest about how you feel. Not the formalistic one, how are you, I'm fine, I'm okay, when you're not. So we do that, and then we open lines. If you've got a problem, here's the line, phone, and having all those support programs. And that's for all our offices around the country. We're trying to do that. So I'll be traveling around all provinces with my team and regions to go and engage in these health programs with them while we're doing cases. So as I choose cases in provinces, I do the same so that we get it healthy. So that's the response to that. I'll close it on that, Chairperson. And then on the question of Honorable on the workplace empowerment and whether is in the slide that I presented earlier that talks about the capacity and outreach program, part of the programs that we do, I think maybe in the next time when we come, we'll present those programs.
Director, can I request, because we're all going to be challenged with load shedding.
Okay.
Please, if you can try your level best to be just pointed and short. Okay. Because we'll please.
Yeah, we do have programs, Chairperson, of workplace empowerment, workplace mediation, support programs. It's just that now we don't have resources to, because we have to use our part-timers to go and do the non-case work. But we can't afford to do it now. So the limited ones that we've been doing, we're doing. I mean, if you've seen the Masmat strike, the Sakau strike that we're talking about, for example, right? And many other ones, not the only one. Some of those we can, in fact, empower for workplaces to its workplace dispute resolution program. We can do that, in short. There was another question just quickly on the impact of budget cuts on service delivery. It does affect it directly. That we can say without doubt. But we're trying to adjust and adapt on what we've got to make the best of what we have. We do understand that, you know, budget doesn't only affect the CCMA. It affects other departments as well and all of that. But that's the reality in short, Chairperson. Accessibility, yes. There's two things that affect accessibility for us. One, it's the COVID, because we did ask, because the cost of the PPEs and all of that, it's a lot of money. Last year, it cost us 6 million rand. For us to open offices, our numbers will double, but we need to cater for everybody. We can't afford that. So there's a relationship between the two. Does it affect accessibility? Yes, it does. There are those that can't access us because of the digital platforms. That is a fact. That's a direct response. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, while you are there, can you please also address the SALGA agreement in response to the question raised by Member Mkondo?
Oh, okay. We also create partnerships, Chairperson, because of money. We spoke to the South African Local Government Association because they've got the spread all over the country and in areas where we can't reach. We've tried the same with UDG, where we piggyback on the department's programs, like the mobile buses and all of that, and trying to share our referrals and all of that. So that agreement has been done. We're going to be using SALGA offices in the municipalities so that we can improve on accessibility, given the challenges that we have. That's the alternative that we're creating, so that we don't have to pay for venues where we go. Because when we go to guest houses, to other places, they charge us money to use those places for hearings. If you can look at some point when you have time, we'll show you the picture. When we look at the outlying areas, like in the Northern Cape, because of its size, if you can see what commissioners go through to go to cases, you'll really give them an award. Some of them travel the whole day just to do one case, traveling 800 kilometers, sometimes 1,000 kilometers to get to a venue where you can do a case. They will be out of their houses for 2 weeks to do three or four cases because of the distance they have to travel. They have to be paid for the car. They have to take the interpreter with. It's very, very difficult and painful conditions. But the SALGA approach, we hope, to the extent that it can, it will assist us on the accessibility question. But we still have to pay commissioners that go there. Mostly it's part-time commissioners. So now, as we speak, we've increased it from 5 to 10 cases per part-time commissioner. But that's just until the end of the financial year. On whether we'll still have 10 or 5, it will depend on how our budget looks like next year, February, March, on how far we can take it, because that's what dictates. We have to meet all the obligations that exist. So I guess that, and thank you, Chairperson, with that question. I've just ended that in the response. Thank you very much. If there's any other we didn't respond to, I will not talk to the other parts that I want to, when load shedding happened, Chairperson. We'll deal with them next time.
Thank you very much. DG, is there anything that you want to reflect on?
No, Chair, thanks. Just on the issue of budget cut, I think the director spoke about it, and that's something that equally concerns us as a department, and we try our best to make sure that CCMA is resourced, given the important role that they play. We are talking to National Treasury, and we're also looking at our own savings to make sure that we augment their budget. But it is a concern, Chair. We're not taking it very lightly. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Is the minister and the DM around?
I don't think so, Chair. I was checking. I don't see them.
Okay, it's fine. I can see myself. They're not here. No, thank you very much. Thank you very much, members and to all the office of the AG, the department, and the DG for really being patient with us. I know, members, it has been quite a long day, but it was necessary and important that we continue. And my apologies that we have put members under pressure. It was just circumstances beyond our control. And I hope as we'll be preparing for our PRRR, will then be more, these processes are processes that are more empowering. We will then look forward for the information that Productivity SA said is going to provide us. We have noted the change, the improvements in the reports in the department, but there's still a lot of areas that must be cleaned up. And when we will be calling you in the next meeting to check on those, we will monitor you. We will call you wherever we see a need to do that. So we hope that after this, you will then go back and correct the areas that have then been corrected. But we are happy. We are concerned. As the chair, I think on behalf of the committee, we are very much concerned with SEE, but we are happy that you have new management. We will call them at an appropriate time if we want to really see progress around those. Having said that, thank you very much. Until we meet again next week, because next week we'll then be adopting our report and prepare for our PRRR debate. Having said that, those that are traveling, travel safe. Those that are going to sleep, sleep well. And those that are going to eat supper, I don't know at this time whether it's that healthy. But thank you very much. That was on a lighter note. Our meeting stands adjourned until we meet again. So bye.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable thank Members. You. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Chair. Bye. Thank you, Honorable Members.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.